Haymaker Coffee Company was established in 2021 to create the best coffee to fuel the underdogs who perseveres, who hustles, and have the give-it-all mentality to achieve their American dream. Haymaker Coffee only roasts top quality, specialty-grade coffee beans, resulting in brews that satisfies those who demand every drop from their coffee and day. If you work hard, run hard, fight hard, and play hard, we have your coffee right here.
And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Monday. What day is it? Monday. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Hope you had a good weekend. Another week on the PGA Tour, another win for the big guy from Spain, who it looks like he might just win everything this year and might have to get to that number one spot in the world. Is he currently is number three, believe it or not, two wins in two tries here in the calendar year of 2023. Lots to talk about there in the American Express. I was out there early in the week, and a lot coming up here in the way of LIV as well. Now, we're recording this about midday on a Monday, anticipating the release of the schedule at any moment. So it may drop by the time this podcast drops. So we got some thoughts there. They've signed a TV deal. And then also about the TGL, the league that Tiger and Rory are behind, as you're starting to see some news drop on that. So we got to go to our man, golf writer for SI.com, Mr. Bob Herrig. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Travis. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
How do you keep all this together? Does every league, every tour have its own notebook? You know, like, cause this is, it's hard to keep it all together in your head right now. You know, you kind of have to have, okay, here's the PGA Tour. Here is LIV Golf. Here's now the TGL. Here's the LPGA Tour. Here's PGA Tour Champions. Here's the Canadian Tour. Here's, you know, I mean, there's a lot going on right now. How do you keep it all together?
Yeah, you're right. The LIV thing has made things a lot more complicated because the other entities all sort of worked in conjunction with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, I've often remarked, you know, not only do you have the PGA Tour that you have to get to know, but you have to know the USGA, you have to know the PGA of America, Augusta National, the RNA. You know, obviously there's the other tours associated with the PGA Tour. There's the LPGA Tour, which I don't do a lot with, but you know, it's still another entity. I mean, there's a lot going on there. Now you throw LIV in, and it's become quite a, you know, quite a juggling act to try to figure out, you know, keeping it all straight. And since they're not going to be playing together much, you know, like the thought now is how much attention will they continue to get? Mm-hmm. You know, how much attention will LIV get? How much attention to their actual golf, I guess I should say, will they get? I'm curious to see at some point, are we going to care about the results?
Yeah.
You know, because ultimately that's what needs to happen for them. You need to care who's winning and what's going on.
Yeah, right. The human side of this, of competing and doing something more than just the paycheck. The money is part of it. But we know that Americans like to rally behind the story, legacy, you know, the history of the game. All those things have mattered. So we'll get to LIV Golf here momentarily, but let's go to the folder that is the PGA Tour. And they were out at Palm Springs. I was out there early in the week doing some things for the cut. Love that place. I talked about it on the pod on Thursday. And just the vibe I feel like on the PGA Tour is changing. I really appreciate this younger generation, even the generation of Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth of the world. And just how I think there's a little less of an edge. You know, I feel like they're more approachable. I feel like they're more transparent, and it's just nice. And I think the PGA Tour has leaned in a little bit more, and the vibe is comfortable out there. And part of that vibe, of course, is John Rahm, who now has played two times in 2023, and he's won both of them. And what's really impressive, Bob, is he's done it two different ways. I mean, you look at the Century, you know, he was dominant with the driver, and he was dominant with the putter. Positive four driver, positive six with the putter. And he turns around 2 weeks later and he comes here at the American Express and he's dominant with the irons and his short game was good enough. His putter, believe it or not, he lost 2.2 strokes gained putting and still won. Can you imagine losing 2.2 strokes gained putting and shooting 27 under par? That's how good and how well-rounded John Rahm is, that he's won two tournaments and he's won it two different ways. And when you're great situationally, that is greatness, my friend, right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to win a golf tournament being, losing strokes to the field. You know, we typically see that as the place where you make up for all the other stuff. So it kind of speaks to how good all the other stuff was.
Right.
It's continually giving himself chances. And, he bemoaned a little bit some of the putting. He thought he was hitting good putts. He hit, you watch and just a bunch didn't go in. Mm-hmm. But yet he got enough to go in. I think the number is he's 54 under par through 8 rounds of golf.
Yep.
I don't care what golf courses you're playing. That's amazing. You know, and obviously completely different styles of golf too. I mean, obviously the setups are not that difficult. At the American Express, it's a pro-am format. They can't beat you up there, but still, you know, it's desert golf compared to in Hawaii. And, there was a good bit of wind in Hawaii. I mean, there's some different factors that he had to face, and he handled it pretty darn well. And I think it's great for the PGA Tour right now to have somebody come out and dominate like this. Parity sounds good. It's good in team sports. It's not so great in golf, I don't think. I think it's good when you have somebody step up, just like Scheffler did last year.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. In fact, I was texting with some people about that last night, and just, this is a good thing, you know, that John Rahm is dominating right now and is the force, because him and Rory, that kind of play and that kind of domination that they're capable of. I think they need them leading the way, carrying the torch right now for the PGA Tour. And of course, Rahm has committed to the TGL, which is part of Rory and Tiger's lead. I read just this morning that Colin Morikawa did as well. And we'll get to the TGL here in a minute and what that's about. And as news starts to hit with that. The other thing that kind of hit me, Bob, is as I'm watching this coming down the stretch, is Davis Thompson, the rookie. I got to spend some time with Davis in the fall last year out in Vegas. You know, quiet guy. Obviously very young coming out, but confident. He has a real quiet confidence about him. Went to Georgia. He's aware of all these Georgia Bulldogs that are out there, and he wears that proudly as well. And I told him, I said, look, when you're on the Korn Ferry Tour, I said, you were probably statistically, and they don't keep this stat from a total driving standpoint, you were probably the best driver out there. You know, the most dominant driver. You're long and you're accurate. And in the distance era, that's a pretty good strength to have, right? and I was like, so I'm looking at him, I'm like, man, your game transfers out here. Like, if your driver's a weapon and you can win in total driving, you're going to give yourself a lot of opportunities. Now, the question becomes, is his putter going to be good enough? I think over a period of time where Davis, A, keeps his card, but I think B, when he putts well, like he did this week, he has a chance to win. But you could see the difference, Bob, down the stretch between the vet in Rahm and the rookie in Thompson. And the emotions are gone. The intensity is up. The adrenaline's cooking. They get to 17. And what does Rahm do? He sticks the pin high right in the middle of the green. And what does Davis Thompson do? He tugs it a little bit, 8-10 yards too deep into the green. Mm-hmm. No chance. They go to the 72nd hole. What happens? Thompson overshoots the green. What does Rahm do? He's in the bunker, rolls it up there to 8 feet. So you can just see, like, the guy that was just more in tune with his body under the gun versus the guy that the adrenaline, he goosed it a little bit and hit some uncharacteristic short irons too far. But I look at Davis. I've been really big on Davis Thompson. I've been really big on Taylor Montgomery. When the driver's the weapon, to me, I think he has it for the long haul. What do you say?
He sure showed a lot, I thought. I mean, to get in there and go toe-to-toe with Rahm. I mean, look, they were tied with, what, 3 holes to go when Rahm, I guess it was 16, when Rahm, moved ahead. And that's pretty good. I mean, Rom couldn't shake him. Yep. Rom was, and Rom was hitting it great, which has to be a bit unnerving if you're Davis, who is trying to hang in there. And as you said, battling those emotions and kind of trying to control himself. And yet he did. He hung in there. I mean, it, I'm sure he's disappointed. I mean, there's so much that comes with winning. You know, the difference between winning and not means so much. I mean, it gets you to the Masters, of course, and Kapalua and all sorts of things. But I thought, you know, if you, you'd be silly not to take the positives out of that and recognize that, hey, you know, you gave yourself a great chance. You've put yourself in a great position now this year to where maybe you feel like you can go after a little bit more. You don't have to worry. I don't think he's going to have to worry about his card now. You know, a high finish like that puts him well up there.
Yep.
And now it's like, okay, you know, think about what didn't work and work on it and see if you can go after another one.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to say that when you're looking at a PGA Tour player, like these guys that come up, and I like to try to get out in front with some of these players, and it's like, whose game is going to transfer? And like the best chance to transfer, they all belong there. But like, who's the one that, yeah, I like that game right there. That game makes sense. I mean, Taylor Montgomery just makes sense. To me, the guy looks like a superstar. I mean, he just looks like an absolute super, looks like a young DJ loping around out there, long legs, long arms, boat at the top, just nukes it out there. No problem. 315. He's the best putter. He's the best putter on the PGA Tour right now. Okay, so you can be dominant with your driver and you can putt. Sign me up. I know strokes and approach matters, but he doesn't even have to be that polished to when you're that good on both sides of it. And Davis is the same way. I think the driver is dominant. I think his iron game is good enough. I'll sacrifice a little bit of a clunky short game, and I'm okay with a streaky putter. You know, just give me the solid weeks, and you know, to me that's how you last out there. So, all right, they move on to Torrey Pines. You know, this is a fun one to watch. You know, I was joking with a caddy out there. Whose caddy was it? It wasn't Taylor McGann. It was another rookie's caddy. Either way, anyway, they rolled into Amex their first time, right? And they got to get ready for three courses. Yeah. Like, this is brutal. You have to get ready for three courses. Now they go up and they got to get ready for two at Torrey and then three at Pebble. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like you want to talk about initiation as a young caddy coming into the mix on the West Coast.
No Crazy. Doubt. I don't want to say it's a drawback, but it is a challenge about this time of year. It's why you don't necessarily see guys play all three.
Right.
It's a lot to learn. Two of those are pro-am formats, which means long rounds. Or certainly can mean long rounds. So it's challenging, but you know, the other side of it is, you know, the pro-am is such an integral part of tournaments, and these tournaments that do it as part of the competition, you know, they're getting a lot of money for those spots and raising a lot of money for charity and all those things. It's kind of a balancing act, you know, like you can sit here and say, oh God, they shouldn't do that. It's too hard on the players. The other side of it is look at what good it does too. It's a hard issue, but it is a lot of golf to learn. You know, this is where the guys who've done it a few times are better off. They know which course they can probably skip. You know, it's hard to get three practice rounds in, you know, leading into a tournament. And you know, so I'm guessing that, you know, maybe they play nine holes on one, or they walk one or take a card or whatever. But it is. That's a challenge for the caddy and the player. And, you know, again, I think that probably helped out Rom. He's played those courses. He's won there. That's an advantage that he had in addition to the fact that obviously he's pushing to be the number one player in the world.
So they're at Torrey. Good field. John Rom is there and others. Then, of course, the other part of professional golf in the men's game is this Live Golf cuts a TV deal with the CW. All right. Now the CW is not on very, very often in my household. But you know, you could look at this on either side, right? I mean, Live was on YouTube last year. They've been trying to get a TV deal. We know historically in the United States who the major players have been and are when it comes to showing professional golf. CW is not one of them, but they got the deal done. I know you did a piece on it. As you look at it, you know, how do you kind of view maybe the pros and cons as this next step for LIV Golf?
Yeah, well, I think they probably did the best they could do. I think that's how you have to look at it. They weren't going to be on NBC, CBS, ESPN, or Golf Channel.
Right.
So now, you know, you've taken away the biggest ones. ABC is part of ESPN. Mm-hmm. So there was no options there. You know, the PGA Tour has that market cornered. Even if those networks could have done it or wanted to do it, there was no room. They wouldn't really be able to. Or it would have been very difficult. You'd been showing LIV Golf on weeks when you don't have the PGA Tour going up against the PGA Tour, and you're kind of, you know, you're in partnership with them. That wasn't going to work. So the only other options were Fox, which, you know, had a hard time with the U.S. Open, apparently wanted to be paid to take it.
Right.
It was not a rights fee deal. It was going to be, you were going to have to pay to be on the air. You were going to, it was going to be a time buy, which, you know, happens in the business. It happens in radio a lot. A person might have a show or what have you, and actually goes in and buys the time from the station and is responsible for everything else. So that is not that unusual, especially for a startup, but LIV didn't want that. So they worked out this deal with the CW, which apparently is going to be a revenue sharing deal with no upfront money paid. That's probably the best solution, or, you know, best outcome they could have gotten. Mm-hmm. And look, you know, the CW has been the butt of a lot of jokes, understandably so. It's not exactly what we think of. It's basically a syndicated, you know, it's a bunch of local affiliates that run syndicated programming, a lot of reruns, court shows. A lot of them have their own local news outlets. They're independent affiliates. But you know, the way if I'm looking at it positively for LIV, I use the example of the NCAA basketball tournament. You know, what they spread that around to four outlets. Right. One of them is True TV. You know, I at right this second, I could not find True TV. I would have to look at my guide and figure out where it is. But I figured out where it is during the NCAA basketball tournament. So if I don't know where the CW is, I can go to my guide and figure it out. And they're on almost every cable outlet, like 98%.
Yeah.
Like they're in more homes than ESPN and USA Network and Golf Channel. It's just that the homes that they're reaching aren't necessarily, at least right now, you know, not necessarily geared to a golf audience. It's their job now to get people to find it, or to promote it enough to get people interested to switch over, or even if you normally watch it, to tune in.
Now, I guess WWE is coming to CW too, right? I mean, I guess that's the next
natural
piece.
It sounds to me like they want to get into some sports. You know, they got bought by Nexstar last year. They have a 75% ownership. You know, I think they're looking to change the direction a bit. There's been some rumblings that the WWE is going to be bought by the Saudis, or at least
I think it is. Yeah.
And if it's not fully, it's a big stake.
Right.
And so now all of a sudden you've got some conflicts that I think you have to look at. You know, obviously there's been a lot of negativity about the ownership of LIV, the backing of LIV. It's perfectly understandable for all the reasons that I'm sure you've talked about. And we all know, you know, it's an uncomfortable relationship for a lot of us to see it going down that way. But on the other hand, they are involved in a lot of things like this. You know, they have ownership of a Premier League football club. They've got the Formula One there. They've got a big tennis tournament. They obviously have a golf tournament next week, the Saudi International. They're trying to develop golf in the country. You know, they're investing around the world, and many U.S. companies do business there. It's complicated, you know? Yeah. And so it actually helps LIV's cause, I think, when you see them venture into other things, because if they, and of course that's probably their goal. They want to become more mainstream. They want to become more accepted. And, you know, obviously there's people on the other side of that who think, well, we don't want them to do that unless they change their ways, you know? And so that's where the controversy lies.
So the schedule, as I mentioned at the top of the show, when we are recording this kind of midday on a Monday, and it may come out before we publish it, but it's going to be coming out, the LIV Golf schedule. And Mito Pereira has made the leap over, which love myself some Mito Pereira, but I'll have to watch him over there. I can't imagine how much money is being thrown at Tom Kim right now. I mean, I would just have to assume like they're all over this young sensation. And let me tell you something, folks. Like, I've been around Tom Kim a couple times now in the last 5 months, and he's just like a glass of milk, you know? I mean, he's just pure, transparent, loving, fun guy, smiling, fist bumping. You know, he's just the best.
Yeah.
And nice the dude's guy, got major skills, you know, major skills. Another top, what was it? Six. He finished sixth at the American Express, fifth at Century. That's coming off the, you know, a couple wins to finish up last year. I mean, he's just an incredible player. All right, Mito's over there. But when they announced the schedule, Bob, can you give us a sense? Like, I know you don't know the exact, but like maybe roughly, you know, how many we're looking at, how many of those potentially in the state, and then the teams have to be pretty well set, don't they? I mean, like, there's not going to be a lot of jockeying once the schedule's set. Am I understanding that right?
Right. Well, it's going to be 14 events. It appears that 8 of them will be in the U.S. 6 will be outside. They had already announced Australia, Singapore, Mexico, and Spain. They're going to announce, if they haven't already, while we're talking, they might be announcing London, where they started last year. And then it appears they're going back to Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, which was not part of the plan late last year. And this, in my mind, is why the schedule release has been delayed, because it sounds to me like, you know, the people putting up the money want an event in their home country, and that wasn't part of the plan. And now trying to fit it in is not easy, because they had deals with other places. You really can't play in Saudi in the summer. I went to the one in October. It was, you know, 95 degrees, and the wind was like a hair, you know, blow dryer. I mean, so you can't go there in June and July. And if you weren't going to start there, which also would have been problematic, given that the Saudi International is next week, are you going to play it like the very next week? I think there was some talk about doing that, keeping the guys. Most of the LIV guys are going to play in the Saudi International. So then what? They play the same golf course 2 weeks in a row. So it appears that they're going to end their season in Jeddah with their team event, and they're stretching it out longer than they had planned. It was supposed to end in September before the Ryder Cup. Now it looks like they're going to have one event in October and one event in November. So, you know, like, part of their thing was having a condensed schedule and giving these guys an off season. And, you know, all right, one event a month isn't exactly strenuous, but still, the idea was to get it over with. So that's where they're at. Now the players, you know, they have kept a good lid on what's going on with that. You know, Mito Pereira is really the only one that's come out. He's been sort of rumored to be going with them all along. He's great friends with Joaquin Neiman. Apparently, Neiman's recruited him hard. But they have a few more openings. We have no idea. I don't think there's going to be a huge name that jumps over. From what I understand, you know, their days of paying that huge upfront money, it's not to say they're not going to give a lot of money, but I don't think it's going to be to that level. I think they feel like they launched, they got started. Now they've got a TV deal that they don't need to do it to that degree.
Right.
And you know, the way their model is, look, they can do whatever they want. They can change it if they want. It's supposed to be 12 locked teams of four men. And apparently every team will have a reserve. So 60 players. How you deal with those other 12 guys who might not play, I have no, that's going to be an interesting part of this. But when you have a team thing, and if somebody gets hurt, you have to have a fill-in. Like, how do you, Like they need to, they haven't said how they're addressing things like that.
Like Kevin Na last year was sick and couldn't even get off the floor. Remember, he was just pain. He was really ill.
It happened to Brandon Grace and it cost him a chance at the individual team title or individual title that Dustin Johnson won, $18 million, by the way. Mm-hmm. And cause he had to withdraw from the event in Thailand. And so he was out. And then he did play the next week in Saudi, but he had forfeited his ability to do it. Now, as far as the teams, they weren't allowing guys to be replaced. I think they were going to change that. You know, it sort of makes it hard if now you only got three guys. These are all things, you know, all the growing pains of what they're doing. Yep. You know, they're making some things up, not making it up, but changing things on the fly. And that's why I don't completely shut the door on them. You know, let's just say I'm going to just throw them out there. I don't sense there's any reason. I don't think there's any chance they'll do it. But let's say Hideki decided he wanted to go over after the Masters. Are they not going to make room for him? I just got to believe they would.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh so. Yeah. They would waste no time booting a Chase Koepka to the side for Hideki Matsuyama. Like that's not even, and I know what we told you about Chase Brooks and, you know, maybe that was a 2-for-1, I don't know, but make no mistake. Like
they definitely have guys who are only on 1-year deals.
Yeah.
So they would, you know, or this could be the second year of a 2-year deal. And all they would have to do is pay them off.
Yeah.
Just like you would in team sports. If you cut somebody, you pay them out their contract. Of course, they don't have a chance to earn the prize money, but they've done a pretty good job of getting started. I have to believe they have a plan for how they would address something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure their deal structure is going to change now that they got a TV deal. There's no question in my mind that price is going to come down now a little bit. I'm sure there's some guys that maybe have been offered something and it might be already now that it's a little less than what it was before the TV deal. I would only have to anticipate. It'll be interesting. The TV viewership on CW, you know, now they're going after the individuals that watch golf on TV. Right. And that's historically been obviously the people that have been watching the PGA Tour on TV. So there's going to be a lot that shakes out there, but you know, Cameron Young going over to play in the Saudi International, he gets the release from the PGA Tour. He's been a name that's been lingered. You know, that'd be another good pull. No question about it. Rookie of the year. You know, I think that's where you really get concerned is if these young top players like Cameron Young and Tom Kim use the PGA Tour platform, elevate their status. These guys can play. And then they just get plucked for, $150 million. So, I don't anticipate too much change, but Mito's going, maybe another name or two, perhaps, throughout the year. All right. Last thing, the TGL. Okay. So this is a league that we've been hearing, a little bit about, right? We hear that Rory and Tiger are behind it. I know that, there's some media guys like Golf Channel, NBC guys that have kind of went over with them, you know, to help put this thing together. And if you go to their website, tglgolf.com, you'll learn a little bit more about it. But, you know, basically it's an innovative golf league partnership. They've done a partnership with PGA Tour, fusing advanced technology and live action in prime time. John Rahm's committed. I just saw that Colin Morikawa has committed. Adam Scott has committed. All of this looks to kick off in 2014. But as I see it, Bob, everyone, it's indoors. It's simulator golf. There's all kinds of graphics around me. The audience looks like it's going to be sitting closer to the action. But it's kind of simulation golf, right? Is what we're after here.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm having a little bit of a hard time picturing how that will look. You know, I mean, I certainly understand what a simulator is and, you know, they're right. Sure. They're going to play holes with the simulator.
Right.
And then it sounds like when you get to the green, they might actually be putting or even chipping around a temporary green set up there. And, you know, in a small area with a live audience and, you know, it being shown in a short 2-hour window. I think we have to wait to see. But given the names involved, I have a feeling there's going to be interest.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's a short window of time. It's something different. I think it's going to be Monday nights after football season. So you're not going to be competing with Monday night football, and it's programming, you know, it's, and for the golf person who wants to see Rory or Tiger, I mean, you know, every time Tiger does anything, there's an audience. So I don't necessarily think he'll be part of every one. They haven't exactly explained how that's going to work. Why not? This is one of the things that golf is criticized for, not having alternative formats. Okay, this is something a little bit different. That's where some of these, you know, exhibitions at the end of the year come into play, where you're doing something, you know, the 12-hole thing, the match. This is why I don't, you know, in a way, I don't have an issue with what LIV is trying to do. I don't know that there's something so drastically wrong with 54-hole tournaments, maybe not an entire tour of them. Mm-hmm. You know, a few events here or there.
Right.
What's wrong? You know, the LPGA does 3 or 4 54-hole events a year. Perhaps there's markets where it's better suited to that. You know, you have a week where a guy doesn't have to show up until Wednesday instead of getting there Tuesday. Like, there's like, for as much as that's been panned, there's actually some aspects to it that make some sense. You know, and I look at, you know, you go back, you know, Sam Snead has a bunch of 54-hole wins on his resume. I don't think it's the end of the world. So like, what they're doing here isn't tour golf, but it's affiliated with the PGA Tour. It's PGA Tour players. They're involved. Right. They had to sign off. You know, I think it's an intriguing idea that has a lot of merit.
Yeah, I think it'll do great. I mean, anytime Tiger's behind it and Tiger's on TV and you get to watch Tiger talk golf at all, and now he's going to hit some shots potentially, I think that's... It'll be a slam dunk. Of course, Rory behind him. That's a dynamic duo. And now you're starting to get these guys signed up, and you know, Rahm doing it, Morikawa doing a JT, all that bodes well for them, you know, choosing sides, which this is a PGA Tour. And these are all names that you've kind of heard, oh gosh, you know, Adam Scott's going, and, or maybe Morikawa, you know, so when they commit to this TGL, to me, they've made their decision at that point, and they're not going to live.
No question. Adam was a big, you know, when it was announced that he's going to be part of the Player Advisory Council, the PAC, that was a big sign that he's on board with the PGA Tour. And all of last year, there was talk that he might be leaning towards LIV.
Yep.
And he's made the decision to stay with the tour. And, good on him. I think he sees the value in what they're doing. You know, when all the new designated events, the elevated event stuff came down around the tour championship, you know, we were all asking players a lot of questions. And I thought Adam was very insightful. He said, the tour has a tough job in that it can't satisfy everyone. You know, you've got the stars, you've got the middle of the road guys, you've got the new guys and the rookies and the guys just looking for playing opportunities. And the tour has often tried to be all of that.
Yep.
And it's really hard to do. Mm-hmm. It's hard to take care of playing opportunities when you're trying to create elite fields. You know, on the same hand, if you want to have elite fields and you want to pare down your tournaments, well, then you're taking away playing opportunities. It's very difficult to satisfy all. But he had a great line. He said, look, it's hard to please everyone, but you have to please someone. And he said, in my estimation, you need to please the stars. Yep. You need to take care of the stars. And, you know, it's a commercial entity. We need eyeballs. And so I thought it was a great take. I thought it was a great way of looking at it.
Yeah. I think all this transparency, John Rahm's, he's put it out there. I mean, I think it's all good. I mean, I really do. I think it needs to be heard. It needs to be vented, all of this, because I think you and I've talked about it in the past. I mean, the PGA Tour just got way too watered down, at least in my opinion. And you have these tournaments, and it's not just one, it's a run of them. Look at July last year. It's like, what are we even doing here? You know, I mean, this is not the PGA Tour.
Well, the crazy thing right now is, you know, this is the last wraparound season, right?
Yeah.
So this week is the 13th tournament of the season.
Right.
Because we started and played 9 in the fall. It's going to end.
Fortnite.
Yep. You know, it's going to not going to be that way starting in 2024.
Yep.
13th event. We got 8 more before the Masters. You basically play half the schedule before you get to the first major. The way they're shaping up next year, where you're going to condense it and you're only going to have 34 weeks of tournaments within the core season, is smart. It's something that they should have done a long time ago.
Thank goodness. Yeah. Thank goodness.
And the fall events will still be there for the grinders who are trying to keep their card or trying to enhance their position, and for the golf nuts like us who still want to watch golf. But it's not a great commercial property in the fall when it's got all this other sporting competition. So it's, I think it's a good move on their part. And I think starting next year, the intensity of the season will be enhanced.
Yep.
Because of it.
I totally agree. And it was a smart move moving up this tournament, the Farmers Insurance, here this week.
Yeah.
Remember now, folks, it starts on Wednesday. So tomorrow we'll give you our picks. Ben Coley joins us. And it's a Wednesday start, finishing on Saturday, because you've got the NFC and AFC championship games on Sunday. And that is the 10,000 pound gorilla in this country. And that starts in the fall. So it's hard to go up against that. So yeah, I like the direction of the PGA Tour. We'll do this again. I know things, you know, where's this going to take us, you know, 3 or 4 months from now? Where will we be in 3 or 4 months? And if you'll do it, we'll come back and we'll talk some more.
Sounds great. I'd be happy to. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it, Bob.
PXG has done it again with the launch of a new lineup of drivers, fairways, hybrids, and irons. The new Gen 5 golf clubs deliver significantly increased MOI, faster ball speeds, longer distances, and tighter dispersions, all coupled with the exceptional feel and sound golfers have come to expect from PXG. Schedule your custom fitting or buy online at pxg.com.